Do you have a child who's just a little bit inflexible or maybe very inflexible? Do they have meltdowns at times that surprise you, like in the midst of a birthday party or whenever there's a slight change in routine or just when they get overly tired? If so, you know both the embarrassment and the fear for your child that goes along with it. What on earth is going on? Today, we're going to talk about the behavior under the behavior that you see. We'll look at how retained reflexes impact behavior and learning and how to bring sanity and ease back into your and your child's world. This is LD Expert Live. You may have experienced how a big snowstorm near one airport can cause flight delays and cancellations all over the country. When you get to your you get to your destination eventually, but this causes a great deal of anxiety and disruption to people's lives, especially during the holidays. Just as air travel is dependent on an organized system of flight patterns, our nervous system is organized around a system of reflexes. Primitive reflexes support survival and development in infants, to be replaced with higher level reflexes as the brain and muscles mature. Reflexes need to be working properly in order for us to move through life with ease and flow. When reflexes are not integrated or working properly, they're kind of like canceled flights and closed airports, causing disruption, disorganization, and distress to the person's functioning, attention, learning, and family. Retained or unintegrated reflexes are often at the root of behavior that causes parents to worry and wonder, why does my child act this way? Welcome to LD Expert Live, your place for answers and solutions for learning differences, dyslexia, and attention challenges. I'm your host, Jill Stowell, founder of Stowell Learning Centers and author of At Wit's End, A Parent's Guide to Ending the Struggle, Tears, and Turmoil of Learning Disabilities. This book will help you understand your bright but struggling student better. And there are chapters in it devoted to the topic we're talking about today. To get a free copy, go to parentsatwitsend.com. Lauren Ma and Brianna Hurst from our Stowell Learning Center team will be joining me today for this discussion. This is LD Expert Live. I'm your host, Jill Stowell. Today, Lauren and I will be talking about how retained reflexes impact behavior and learning. Did you know that bedwetting beyond the age of five and sleep problems may be related to a retained spinal gallant reflex? A child who hates to wear shoes may have a retained Babinski reflex. An aggressive, defiant child prone to temper tantrums, or a child who gives up easily and is overly dependent may have a fear paralysis reflex. A student with memory and reading problems may have a retained STNR, symmetrical tonic neck reflex. A student who speaks well but can't get their thoughts on paper may have a retained ATNR reflex. At the most basic level, much of the communication between the brain and the body via our nervous system happens as a result of reflexes. Reflexes that are active when they're not needed or not active when they are needed create glitches in that communication. Unintegrated reflexes, or reflexes that aren't working properly, cause stress to our whole system and push us into fight or flight mode. Spending too much time in fight or flight when we don't actually need to be fighting or running for survival can lead to rigid, anxious behavior and fear of change. Lauren is going to give you a little primer on primitive reflexes. She has the unique perspective of professionally being an expert in this area, but also has the mom perspective with her two beautiful little girls.
Right. So a lot of parents, you know, when they come to us and they're kind of investigating their child's learning challenges, we talk to them and we test kids for primitive reflexes. So they ask us, what are primitive reflexes? So primitive reflexes are neurological patterns. They're actually housed in the spinal cord. They don't go through the brain because the purpose of a reflex is to protect us. We want faster reaction time. And so they're there for survival, to protect us, to strengthen our muscles as we grow and develop. It's not intentional movement. And so to help illustrate this idea of reflexes better, I'm going to talk about how reflexes impact my two girls. So here they are. Yeah. So here are my two girls. On the left, there is Cambria. She just turned 5. We call her Cammy. And on the right, there is Avalon. She is my new baby that I just have had. And she is 3.5 months. And we call her Abby for short. So I'm going to be talking about them as I kind of talk about reflexes throughout this, because I think it helps for parents to just like experience it, like it's real. It makes it real and not kind of just theory. So reflexes start to develop in utero, and they should be present in the first 2 years of life. So here's where I'm going to talk about Abby. This is where Abby is right now. She's 3.5 months. She should be showing reflexes. Those should be present in her. I call her my little ball of reflexes because that's all she's doing. It's not intentional movement. She's just responding to stimulation in her environment. My husband, who does not know anything about reflexes, with both of his girls, thinks they're both geniuses. And so she'll, make a movement. She'll grab his hand and grip really tight. And he, oh, she's so strong, you know, oh, she's going to be really strong when she grows up. No, dear, that's a reflex. Or he'll go to kiss her on her cheek and she'll like open her mouth and, oh, she's a genius. She knew I was going to kiss her. No, dear, that's a reflex. And so she's not intentionally, you know, thinking about her movements. She's just responding to the stimulation. As Abby grows up and keeps making those reflexive movements, those reflexes will start to integrate or go away. This is what is supposed to happen as higher level, more intentional movements take over. But in the case with many of our students at the Learning Center and with my own daughter, Cammy, sometimes they don't, and it can cause disruption to learning or behavior. And so a lot of parents, when we start talking about reflexes and retained reflexes, they ask, well, what causes reflexes to be retained or to not integrate when they should? And we get this question a lot. So we tell parents there are certain risk factors that can contribute to retained reflexes. First one is genetics. So a family history of ADHD or autism, other learning challenges could be a contributing factor to having retained reflexes in an individual. Number two is stress during pregnancy or birth. So, you know, threatened miscarriage, induced labor, prolonged labor, C-section deliveries also put a baby at risk for having retained reflexes, because reflexes, some of the purpose of those reflexes is to help the baby during the birthing process, and that movement kind of down the birth canal helps to integrate those reflexes. And when you have a C-section baby, they didn't get that experience. So a lot of times we see that as being a risk factor for retained reflexes. The third is environmental factors that could happen within the first 2 years of life, because again, those reflexes are there to protect us and they integrate through movement. So if a child maybe had restricted movement in the first few years of life, we see this with NICU babies that were in incubators, or when I was the director of the Irvine Center, about 20% of our population of students were actually adopted. And it's the case with students that were, or children that were adopted maybe in foreign countries where there were still orphanages and they didn't get a lot of stimulation or didn't have a lot of room to move around, that can cause retained reflexes. Any extra stress during the first 2 years of life, again, because those reflexes are there to protect us, can cause the reflexes to remain past the time that they're no longer needed. So now let's look at where reflexes kind of fall on our learning continuum. So reflexes are housed at the very bottom of that green level, core learning skills. They're just the beginning and foundation of core learning skills. They're unintentional movement. They occur in the spinal cord, not even in the brain yet. And so they're the very foundation to all thinking and learning higher up in the continuum. And when we usually think of the continuum, we often talk about academics and learning at the top in the orange and the red, but behavior is also a higher level function that could go up there in the orange and the red, because it's a symptom you see that is usually stemming from an underlying skill that's not serving the individual well. So little things are happening all the time because of reflexes, and they come out as behavior. And what we're seeing more and more of in the center is that kids are coming to us with either diagnoses or they're being treated because of their behavior. I've seen kids as young as 5 on prescribed medications for anxiety or depression, attention, behavioral and emotional labels, things like that. And when we go and test them for retained reflexes, we find that a lot of their reflexes are retained and present.
And really at the root then of those behaviors and that anxiety.
Yeah.
Well, that was great, Lauren. Thank you. Let's take a closer look at some of the behaviors that I mentioned earlier and how unintegrated reflexes could be at the root of that behavior, attention, or learning issue. So bedwetting can be frustrating and embarrassing. But if a reflex is at the root of that problem, you can't shame or punish a kid out of bedwetting. There is a reflex called the spinal gallant, and it's activated by touching along either side of the lower spine. And when it's active and you touch that area, then the hips will sort of flex side to side. In utero, the purpose of this is so that the baby can kind of wiggle their spine up against the spine of the mother. And that's actually the beginning of auditory processing, because the baby is now getting sound through bone conduction. And then in birth, being able to flex the hips kind of helps as the baby goes through the birth canal. Well, if that reflex is retained, as the child gets older, then if it's activated, say they're sleeping on their back or they change positions while they're sleeping, well, that reflex is also connected to the bladder. So it can then cause bedwetting. It can cause sleep problems because they're wiggling all the time. It can cause kids to be very sensitive to tight clothing. So you may have a child who will only wear certain things, but other things, they're not going to wear them because they don't realize it, but it makes them uncomfortable because it's triggering that reflex. These are kids that, you know, when they're sitting in class, you think they have ants in their pants, you know, they're just wiggling all the time. And so they get told to sit still, sit still, sit still. Well, subconsciously, they may really try to sit still. And when they do that, now their body gets very rigid. And so a lot of their attention gets funneled away trying to keep their body still. And so they miss information. And of course, that's going to impact memory and learning.
Absolutely. Another reflex we see retained often in students at the Learning Center is the ATNR, the asymmetrical tonic neck reflex. It's the reflex in babies that's triggered when the baby turns his head, the arm juts out, the same side arm, and eventually, so here, and then eventually further out. It helps the baby develop strength for rolling over, again, the head, and then this side of the body can move to help the baby start to develop core strength for rolling over. It starts to develop hand-eye coordination. So head goes this way, hands here, hey, I have a hand, is what it starts to develop in babies, and eventually hand-eye coordination, awareness of their hand. So this is where Abby is right now. I'll talk about that in a little bit. Laterality. Hey, I have a left side, I have a right side, and awareness of the two sides of the body, and eventually being able to cross the midline. And also near to far vision, because again, the hand is connected. And so I'm looking at it up close. And then eventually as my hands move away from me, I can track my hands moving from near to far vision. So this is the reflex that Abby has present, and she should at 3.5 months. She's working on this right now. She's at that stage, and I don't know, parents, if you remember the stage when they discover their hands. That's where she is right now. So I'll walk in and I'll see her, and she's just like fixated on her hand right now. Well, that's happening because of her ATNR. Her ATNR made that possible. If it keeps happening as the brain matures, and if that reflex does not integrate, let's think about what that would look like. She would probably be really distracted by her hands all the time. She might have difficulty going from near to far if that doesn't properly integrate. A lack of awareness on either side of her body. So, you know, if your head is always connected to that same side of hand, you're not going to develop the awareness that you have another side of your body. And we see that a lot of times in our students with learning, that they have difficulty distinguishing between their right and their left. They have difficulty with tracking or moving their eyes across a page, crossing the midline. You know, kids that don't have a dominant side, we often see that, and with a retained ATNR. We lovingly call this reflex the dyslexic reflex. Not that having this reflex will give you dyslexia, but 9 times out of 10, when we test a student that has dyslexia, they often have this reflex retained. And it doesn't mean that without this reflex, you know, if we integrate that reflex, the child is no longer dyslexic. But with training, the lowest level symptoms of dyslexia can start to be improved.
Absolutely. That ATNR is a really big one with learning challenges. And it can also be, and you kind of alluded to this, it can be related to difficulties with written language. Mm-hmm. Because this reflex works with each side of the body separately, which does help us establish an internal sense of right and left. But if it doesn't integrate by about 6 or 7 months of age, the growing child may not establish a dominant hand. So they may even look ambidextrous, which seems really cool, but actually it gets in the way of being able to write from left to right all the way across a page. You may have noticed that your child writes, and as they write, it's as though it's going, you know, kind of diagonally down the page. Or they may turn their page all the way to one side, so when they're reading or writing, so that they never have to cross the midline of their body. And those things can result from a retained ATNR. Lauren, I know you are so aware of all of this clinically because of the work that we do, but you've also been very aware of the impact of retained reflexes from the standpoint of a parent.
Absolutely. I mean, that is one of the gifts of being a parent, is that your children teach you. So, you know, and here's some sharing time. I'm going to talk to you as a parent and kind of what I've gone through with my other daughter, Cammy. So I talked about stress or complications during birth as a risk factor for retained reflexes. This was the case with Cammy. So she's 5 years old now. Cammy went 8 days past her due date. And I really argued with the doctors, no, I don't want to be induced. I don't want to be induced. I had known about retained reflexes. You know, I'd worked at the Learning Center for 10 years at that point, and I didn't want a C-section. I just really wanted her to have the most natural birth possible. But, you know, it was a factor outside my control. She was 8 days late when they finally did induce me. I had a very prolonged labor. I ended up TMI, but pushing for 3.5 hours. And she finally, you know, did come out. And that ultimately led to her having some retained reflexes. So, and she had several. So the first one that I noticed was a retained moral reflex. So fight or flight. It's one of the reflexes. The moral reflex is a reflex that is supposed to be still elicited in us when there is a real threat. We are supposed to be able to startle and respond and react when there is a real danger. It helps us to deal with that threat without thinking. But if it's retained or overactive, the system responds to minor stressors more intensely. And this was Cammie. So when she was a baby, she had no self-regulation. She couldn't self-soothe. People would say to me, I mean, she's a tiny little thing, like at 2 months. And they'd be like, oh, she's so angry for being so tiny. And at first, I just thought that she was headstrong like me, because, you know, I'm a headstrong person. But as she grew older, I saw a pattern emerge. Any stressor exacerbated the moral reflex and would kick her into this extreme fight or flight. If she were hungry, if she were tired, and then a stressor was added on top of that. Doctor's visits, vaccinations, dentist visits. For her vaccinations, it took myself and two nurses to hold her down because she was so, she fought us so hard. It was, she was almost like feral, spitting and trying to bite and just clawing. And of course, as a mother, you don't want to see your child go through that. It was awful to watch. And the nurse actually said to me afterwards, they're like, oh, we usually only have to do that or hold kids down, you know, to that extreme, you know, if they have sensory issues or they're on the spectrum. And so it was unusual for her to behave like that. And so luckily I was able to kind of identify this pattern and what was going on with her. So I could utilize some of the resources we had at the Learning Center, and I used them, I'm telling you, because I needed to calm that stress response down in her. It was making her miserable. It was making me miserable. And it really helped to reduce her overactive moro.
You know, that moro reflex in an infant is an indicator of a healthy nervous system, and it's a protective mechanism. But boy, if it doesn't integrate by about 6 months, it can cause the child or even adults to operate in that state of high alert or fight or flight, as you saw with Cammie. And that constant state of high alert can overwork the immune system and cause hypersensitivity to touch or sound or light. It can cause allergies and upper respiratory issues. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about what happened on Halloween this year.
So like many of the other parents, I mean, this year, especially because of COVID, you know, I still wanted Cammie to have somewhat of a typical Halloween. You know, we weren't going to do the traditional trick or treating. But my city was offering a drive through trick or treat. And so, but it was on a weeknight. It was on a Thursday night. It was actually the day after her birthday. And so there was already a lot of energy and fun stress kind of going on in her life. And so I, you know, we got all dressed up in costumes and we got in the car and, you know, we were supposed to drive to like the fire station and the police station and you pick up candy at each stop. Well, there was a lot of traffic. And so she did a lot of sitting and there was a lot of anticipation for this event. And then a lot of sitting, in her car seat. Her cousin went with us and she was so excited. So she was kind of building up this energy and then a lot of sitting. And she just had an epic meltdown. I mean, one of the worst that she's had in a long time, because of all of that stress, even though it was supposed to be a good stress, even though it was fun, even though it was a lot of activity around things that she enjoyed, it was still too much for her system to handle. Mm-hmm.
So I know you don't believe this, but as a parent, you might think, well, then all those things that I did didn't work.
No, I don't believe that because I know my child and our systems are dynamic. So that's the thing about reflexes. They're supposed to fire to protect us and stress causes them to fire. And so her response to stress has immensely improved. You know, 3 years old, which is a typical time for meltdowns and tantrums, was really hard for Cammie. And that's when I started to utilize some of the reflex integration techniques and sound therapy that we'll talk about a little bit later to calm her system down, to help her deal with an already kind of tumultuous time, like a difficult time for her. The system is dynamic. And so even though she might still have meltdowns, her recovery is so much faster. Mm-hmm. And so the other part is Cammie doesn't have, I mean, she just started transitional kindergarten. She doesn't have learning issues. But I often wonder what would have happened had I not intervened when she was much younger, because school can be a stressor as well. And what if she has difficulty with school and doesn't like it? Could all of those things fire up again and cause some learning challenges for her? And I'm not seeing that at all. So I fully believe that even though here and there she'll have meltdowns and things like that, it's 100 times different than what it used to be like with her.
And I just want to say to parents, I mean, you were able to catch it really, really early, but you know, the brain, the body, it's amazing. It is never too late, mm-hmm. never too late. We do reflex integration with teenagers and adults, and what a difference. Mm-hmm. So Cammy, going back to Cammy, she is so smart and social. She's like a little actress in the making. She's adorable. Mm-hmm. You can't necessarily tell now that she had retained reflexes, but how else was she affected?
So the other thing that I noticed when Cammy was a baby was that she wasn't meeting her developmental milestones related to movement. So she sat up on time at 6 months. She was right on time. Her fine motor skills were fine. She could pass objects and hold on to objects and reach for objects. That was all fine. But she never rolled over. So at 4 months of age, I was looking for it. I was doing all the tummy time. I was trying to do everything right. She never rolled over. When I got to be about 9, 10 months, she wasn't making any movements towards crawling. And when she got to 12 months, she wasn't pulling herself up to stand, had no ability to even start to try to walk. And so, you know, I kept asking the pediatrician, you know, I was on it. You know, I'd ask the pediatrician, you know, she's not rolling over, she's not crawling. Pediatrician, you know, maybe your floors are too hard, you know, give it some time. Other people, you know, would say, well, she's an early talker. She did talk early. So, usually when they talk early, they walk late. Okay. My in-laws told me that I held her too much, you know, well, maybe because you're holding her, she's not walking. And eventually, you know, I eventually kind of bugged the pediatrician and she did, you know, was not walking for a long enough period that the pediatrician did give me a referral for a physical therapy evaluation. And she did qualify for physical therapy because she was so delayed in her gross motor movements. So at 12 months, I finally got the physical therapy referral and we started physical therapy. We did months of physical therapy and they worked on balance and they worked on, you know, the muscles in her feet and trying to hold herself upright. And they were, you know, they moved her little limbs and getting her to like step and things like that. And she still wasn't walking. And then I started to see it. So I saw those reflexes getting in her way. They would position her to stand up and try to like move her so she could start walking. Her head would go up and her knees would buckle. That's a reflex. That's the TLR. I knew it. I saw it. I see it in our kids. And so I'm like, okay, her reflexes are preventing her from having the coordination and the balance to be able to walk. And so I was determined. I was like, okay, I'm over this. When she got to be about 18 months and wasn't walking yet, I'm going to use one of the tools that we have at the Learning Center called QRI, Quantum Reflex Integration. And it uses low level light stimulation. And I did it on her, this therapy, every day for 4 days in a row. And by the end of the fourth day, she was walking. And everybody in our lives were like floored because she was nowhere near that. I mean, my husband thought it was a miracle. The physical therapist, oh my gosh, she all of a sudden just put everything together. It's because the reflexes were integrated and they were able to support her. So then all of the coordination, all of the training, all of that physical therapy, all those skills that she had built, now she was able to put them to use because the reflexes weren't getting in her way anymore.
Right. That was such a cool thing to see. Mm-hmm. You know, integrating retained reflexes, of course, doesn't resolve all learning, attention, or behavioral challenges, but it's important to understand their role in these difficulties. If you think about our learning skills continuum, reflexes are at the ground floor of the core learning level, that green level, really the ground floor of the entire continuum. So a student with dyslexia or other learning challenges will almost certainly need more than just reflex integration to correct the problems. But if your child is getting appropriate interventions and they're not making the changes that you expected they would make, the answer is probably lower on the continuum because lower brain functions support the higher level functions. This is LD Expert Live. I'm Jill Stowell, founder of Stowell Learning Centers, talking with Lauren Ma about retained primitive reflexes and their connection to behavior and learning. We've been talking about the connection between reflexes and behavior and learning. When students come to the Learning Center for help with learning or attention challenges, the first step is to do a functional assessment to see what is really at the root of the problems that the parent is concerned about. In addition to reflex testing, we listen really carefully to what the parents are saying so that we can listen for symptoms that they're seeing that might indicate issues with primitive reflexes. We've mentioned some of those, but here are a few more characteristics that you might see in school. Easily distracted, difficulty paying attention to details, poor handwriting skills, speech disorders, spelling difficulties, difficulty with times tables and word problems in math, impulsivity and hyperactivity, poor memory, comprehension, and concentration, anxiety, dyslexia, dyscalculia, and auditory processing problems. There's just so much here. We're going to give you a handout. We're going to share a handout with you with the educational implications of retained reflexes. And you can get this by going to stowellcenter.com/reflexes. It's important to understand the connection between these lower brain functions and higher learning. Equally important is knowing that these reflexes can be integrated. So, Lauren, let's talk about some of those interventions for integrating reflexes.
So I referred to a few of our programs. One of them is core learning skills. We call it CLS. And what core learning skills is a program, is a system of movement exercises that integrate retained reflexes, but also build some of those early visual skills and fine motor skills, gross motor skills, because at that core learning skills level, all of those skills are related and connected. And so, and because the brain matures and develops, so a retained reflex is not going to look the same in a baby as it does in a 10-year-old. It's going to look different. It's going to be very subtle. And so we want to incorporate some higher level activities along with primitive reflex integration. We're not generally just working on one reflex. It's a system. Reflexes are really connected and they support each other. There's a lot of reflexes that impact other reflexes. And so you have to work with them together. And with core learning skills, it's a system of movement patterns. So I talked about the ATNR with Abby, how she's head turns and her arm goes out like that. Well, some of our exercises that we have in core learning skills mirror that movement pattern. And so we're teaching kids and teens and adults to make those movements intentionally, to have that reaction go through the brain. So I can move my head and I can move my arm independently of each other. And the more you do that repetitive motion, the more that reflex gets stimulated and gets to integrate. That is how babies, when reflexes are supposed to integrate when babies are little, that's how the reflex integrates, is that pattern keeps happening, that it keeps firing. And so that's what CLS looks like. It's a lot of like intentional repetitive motions to integrate a retained reflex. And this is a program that we can do remotely with students all over the world. We're doing it through remote one-on-one session. So we're coaching the student through it and we move as quickly as they do. So we're looking for, you know, changes in every single session. But it is going to be a lot of movement. So we have kids in front of their computers or their iPads and they're moving and clinicians moving and we're coaching them through that. The other program that we use to stimulate and integrate retained reflexes is QRI. It stands for quantum reflex integration. It uses light as stimulation to stimulate those reflex patterns. So instead of the individual moving consciously and making those patterns, we're actually stimulating those same neurological patterns in the body, but using a low-level laser instead. And this is more of a passive way to stimulate those reflex patterns. We can combine it with core learning skills, or we can use it by itself. Sometimes we do QRI with students that might feel a little bit embarrassed in the beginning about moving, especially if they're on site in the center. Remotely, nobody cares, you know, but if they're in our center, we might, you know, with a teenager, start with QRI to start to stimulate those reflex patterns. That is something that right now, because it does involve specialized equipment, we can only do in the center unless the parent wants to purchase, and then we can also coach that as well. That is what I used with Cammie, because she was so young. She wasn't exactly ready for CLS because it involves a lot of intentional movement. I use QRI with her. And so she would sit and I would run those reflex patterns, and I would do extra on the reflexes that I saw that were retained when I tested her reflexes. And that's what made the difference and got her walking within 4 days. Just kind of like an anecdotal story about the impact that reflex integration can have on a child's life. We had a family come to us in the middle of the lockdown in California here. You know, we shut down. And you know, we all went to virtual learning. A lot of our kids are trying to do virtual learning, and we had a mom come to us that was absolutely desperate, because her 8-year-old daughter was just, you know, running up the walls. I mean, she just could not focus. You know, she was kind of losing her mind over virtual learning, just having a really hard time not being in school. And so she came to us when it was safe to open back up again. We were able to test her reflexes. We found that she had a significant number of retained reflexes. And so we started QRI with her, just working on her reflexes. And she had a lot of diagnoses. She was on medication. I saw her, that she's been with us, I think they started in April or May. So a couple of months, that child is completely different. And the mom actually said to us, probably 2 months ago, she is no longer my problem child. She's now focused on kind of her other child. But like, this girl went from being almost completely dysfunctional, not being able to do any kind of school, to going into this school year and being able to sit in front of the computer and focus, just because her system was now supporting her. And so that's a remarkable story. And I have a ton of them, but that's the one that comes to mind, because a lot of times when you have core learning issues, and we're sitting now, we're not moving as much, we're sitting in front of computers, those things are going to come up even more now with virtual learning.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I want to give you a reference. When you were talking, I was thinking, the developer of QRI wrote a book called Symphony of Reflexes, and that's by Bonnie Brandes. That would be a good resource for parents if you're interested in just understanding reflexes better. And they do actually have some manual reflex integration tools in the back of that book. Another invaluable tool that we use to integrate or to increase regulation and support integration of reflexes and development of core learning skills is sound therapy. In October, we had Alex Doman, the founder of Advanced Brain Technologies and the developer of the listening program, on the broadcast. So if you want to dig into sound therapy a little bit more, watch that episode. The lower frequencies in sound, below 750 hertz, are what we call body sounds. They're grounding and organizing. And we prescribe sound therapy with these lower frequencies for students who lack body control and who exhibit physical overflow. So these are often children who are hypersensitive, wiggly, clumsy, or uncoordinated, who experience disorientation when reading or writing, or those with attention and behavioral challenges. These students need settling and grounding. they need to develop a more secure sense of where they are in space in order to improve their self-control. Well, the auditory system is connected to the attention system and regulation and the emotional system in the brain, and then to all of the organs in the body except for the spleen. So it's widely connected throughout the body. So we can use sound, and in this case, it's beautifully recorded music to actually help with that grounding and sense of security and settling. So sound therapy using lower frequencies like the Advanced Brain Technology Spectrum Program can have a rapid and profound effect on students with extreme anxiety, poor physical and emotional regulation, and reactive behaviors. So it definitely supports all of the work that we're doing there at that reflex integration and core learning level. You know, this is an important topic, and you're right. Someone commented, you know, it's like you don't hear that much about it, and that's true. I did some training with a developmental pediatrician one time, and she was commenting, we were talking about these things, and she said, you know, we look at these reflexes to see how the baby is when they're born and to make sure they're developing properly. But she said, you know, it was never a consideration, never a thing that they even thought about, that if they didn't integrate, it could cause any problems down the road. They only look at them in infants. So it is, there's information out there for sure, but it is not necessarily widely recognized, talked about, noticed. So, all right. I told you I was going to give you a little tip here. Earlier in the episode, I mentioned that bedwetting can be related to a retained spinal reflex. There are certainly other reasons why a child might have problems with bedwetting, but if your child is struggling with bedwetting, try having him or her do snow angels 2 to 3 times a day. This exercise will help integrate the spinal galant reflex, and it has been very successful in eliminating the bedwetting problem. And no, you don't have to have snow to do it. Don't forget to download your handout on educational implications of retained reflexes by going to stowellcenter.com/reflexes. Lauren, what very quick last thoughts do you have for our viewers today?
Okay. First thing is that I call it mom's instinct. Parents' instinct is usually correct. So all kids go through phases that come and go, but if you see behaviors or issues that are pervasive over time, it's an indicator that something else might be going on. So like in Cammie's case, I saw an atypical response to stress, or I saw that her gross motor movements were delayed. Go with that instinct. If you're seeing the same kind of pattern as your child gets older, still, you know, difficulty with the same types of skills, there's usually something there. And the other thing, this is a big deal, and mom's guilt is also a real thing. It's not your fault, and it's never too late. So do not blame yourself if your child has core learning issues or retained reflexes. You can't help genetics. You can't help how your kids came into this world. You can't, if you're an adopted parent, you can't help what happened to your children before you got them. Okay, so when Cammie was born, I had already been working for the Learning Center for 10 years, and I still had difficulty recognizing that she had retained reflexes. And I'd worked with hundreds and hundreds of kids, and I had difficulty recognizing it in my own child. So do not blame yourself for the cause. Do not blame yourself if you don't catch it in time. This is not something that's talked about widely. And so, the time is now. The time to take action is now. And there are definitely things that you can do now to help your child.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lauren, for sharing your expertise and for sharing your insights as a parent. Always, always brilliant. This is LD Expert Live, your place for answers and solutions for learning disabilities, dyslexia, and attention challenges. STOL Learning Centers are open for remote sessions and screenings. We're also seeing students on site. We work with children and adults doing targeted brain training to improve thinking and learning. If you would like a free consultation for yourself or your child, give us a call or visit our website at stolcenter.com.